Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The Little Black Shadows. I lived in a small two-bedroom house in Smyrna, Georgia with my parents for about 8 years, beginning in 1987. At first, nothing really noticeable happened, but then, after we got settled in good, I started seeing things out of the corner of my eyes, like little black shadows that would peep around the door, but would disappear when I looked directly at the spot. I never thought this was anything abnormal. Then later on, my mom told me she would have weird dreams when she was alone in the house. She said she would fall asleep in the chair and would dream about things like being chased or playing with a dog, and the dog would bite her, and it hurt so bad it woke her up. I never thought this was weird, either because I did things like that, and I always thought that your subconscious didn't know the difference between what was real or what was a dream. But since we moved, neither one of us had had these sorts of dreams anymore. She also admitted to seeing things out of the corner of her eye, like I did, but she never mentioned anything other than that she had her dreams. One time, me and her were the only ones in the house, and I was sitting in a chair that was backed up against the front door, and directly on the other side of the door was a small sidewalk and then some bushes. I heard some breathing, like a dog panting fast, like it was running, but it stayed in one place long enough for me to notice it. Then it sounded like it ran behind me and disappeared. I only heard the breathing and not the actual sound of the feet hitting the ground. I asked my mom if she heard it, and she didn't, since she was in the kitchen right next to the living room, but it could have been an actual dog running by the door. I thought that couldn't have been possible because it was so loud and I didn't hear any feet hitting the ground. Then one time I remember I was laying in my bed facing the wall and just about drifted off to sleep when I distinctly heard someone behind me whisper my name real loud. I jumped and turned over, but no one was there. Needless to say, I didn't sleep very well that night. My bedroom was also where I would notice the shadows out of the corner of my eyes the most. Sometimes I would also jerk awake for no reason. I told my dad once that I hit the bed so hard when I jerked awake that it was almost like I was floating above my bed while I was asleep, and when I woke up, I would fall back to the bed. One other time, and this was the part of the story I forgot until recently, I was in the house alone. My parents had gone to church or somewhere, and I had a lot of studying to do, so I had stayed home. It was during the summer, so the kitchen window was open and the chairs had been moved and replaced by a couch in front of the front door. I was sitting on the couch, and it was nearly dusk. I was sleepy, so I put the two pillows from the couch on my lap and bent forward to rest my eyes for a minute. I heard what I thought was my parents coming home. Since the house was so small, you could just about see all the rooms from the living room, and the door from the driveway is not that far away. Anyway, I heard them coming through the door, and when I tried to get up to look, I couldn't. It was like I was held down in that position, and all I could do was listen. I started to panic, and I was very awake at this time. I heard footsteps going back and forth across the kitchen, and I thought it was my mom, so I tried to call her because I thought something was wrong with me, but I couldn't even talk. All I could do was moan, and still it didn't come out very loud. I heard blinds bang across the kitchen window, like the wind was blowing and the footsteps continued. It sounded like they would walk up to the edge of the kitchen where the carpet for the living room starts, then turn around and go back. All these sounds were going on at the same time, and all I could think of was that I was drugged and someone was robbing the house with me laying right there. After a while, I drifted off again, but it was like a forced sleep. Believe me, I did not want to sleep, but when I woke up a few minutes later, I could move and talk just fine. I looked in the kitchen and everything was in place and the curtains weren't moving. What made it even weirder was there was no wind that day and our kitchen window doesn't even have blinds. I never really thought about all this stuff being attributed to ghosts or anything like that. I never gave it much thought, although I knew it was possible, but if I had realized what was going on, when it was happening, I probably would have been scared senseless. Also, during the time most of this was going on, I couldn't stop thinking about my grandfather who had been dead since I was about 4 or 5. One night, he came to me in a dream, and ever since, the thoughts have left me. And very soon after we moved in, my uncle, who was close to my dad, was killed in a terrible way. Then, I found out that an older woman had died in the house, and before that it was rented out and the people had a lot of drug parties, but I don't know if they were into anything occult. To me, it sounds like most of this stuff can be explained by something being wrong with me, like my continuous thoughts could have caused the dream to happen, or the other things could have been because I was extremely tired or over-imaginative, but it just seems like too much stuff to be coincidence. However, I was the only one who said anything about anything weird going on. My dad never said he saw or felt anything, and my mom never said anything other than seeing shadows and her dreams. Deep down inside, I know that there were ghosts in that house. Ghost Sailor. Back when I was about 9 or 10 years old, my parents took my brother and I to the Baltimore Harbor to tour the 18th century warship Constellation. We walked throughout the ship, both the upper and lower decks, seeing everything there. It was near closing time for tours through the ship when my brother and I heard my parents calling us to come back upstairs. We're below decks checking out all the cannons. We then went upstairs to our parents. I asked them if my brother and I could go back downstairs one more time before we would leave. They said we could. While downstairs, my brother was walking over by the left side of the ship, and I was looking at a cannon over on the right side of the ship. I looked at the cannon furthest away from me, about 20 feet, when I noticed a young sailor dressed in black pants, a white striped shirt, round black hat with a tassel at the back, standing beside the cannon, holding a long, tall wooden pole. I called to my brother to come over and see the sailor, which he did so. I remembered saying to the sailor, "He sure had a nice ship here." As we stood there looking at the sailor turned his gaze from the direction that the cannon was pointing and looked right at us. I will never forget the look in his eyes as he stared at us. He did not speak at all, then turned his gaze back to looking out through the gun porthole. We then went back upstairs to tell our parents about the sailor we had seen below decks. While I was telling my parents about this, one of the people taking care of the ship came up to us and said we would have to leave. The ship was closing. I told that person that the sailor downstairs really made the whole tour seem so real. He was surprised, and then told us that there was no one else below decks, and that they have nobody dressed in a sailor suit working on the ship. I recently went back to see the ship again. Although I did not see the sailor on this visit, standing in the same spot and looking at the same cannon, I began to feel cold chills and the hair on the back of my neck was tingling. I have a feeling he's still there. Dabbling in the strange. This took place in Denver, Colorado in 1979. I was stationed at Lowry Air Force Base for training at the Air Force Air Intelligence Training Center. I considered myself a very objective person, but this incident shook me up. I'll relate the events as accurately as possible, and you be the judge. My roommate at the time was an older guy, about 26 or so, from Kentucky. I was 18 and had only been in the Air Force 3 or 4 months. Like many people, I was interested in paranormal activity and began reading some books on the subject. One of these books mentioned a ritual on how to summon a demon. My friends and I were contemplating a trip to a reportedly haunted old hotel, the Peck House, in Empire, approximately an hour or so away. So this kind of subject was often on my mind at that time. Anyway, one evening in our room on base, my roommate and I were playing around and tried to summon this demon by name. I don't recall where I got the name from, but wouldn't give it out anyway. At one point, we both began to feel a coldness that I refer to as an ion wind coming from the corner of the room where my bed was located. Well, after some time, we attributed it to a draft or something. This was winter in Denver and nothing significant happened. So we got ready for bed. We each had a twin-size bed in the same room. After laying down on my bed, I noticed that it was vibrating pretty violently, almost like those old magic finger beds in motels. This scared me pretty bad, to the point that I jumped across the room into my roommate's bed, vowing that I would not sleep in mine. Of course, like young guys do, he ridiculed me pretty badly and laughed. He said he'd sleep in my bed. Well, almost as soon as his head hit the pillow, his eyes got wide as saucers, and he jumped up from the bed, bellowing that the damn thing was moving. This guy was not the type of person to be intimidated easily, and I was nearly as frightened by his reaction as I was by the incident itself. After 17 years, I don't really remember how we passed the night, but I do recall that after this incident that we both started missing things. I don't believe he had anything to do with this, since we were both required to be in classes all day without much opportunity to get back to the room for mischief. Specifically, I remember one case where I was missing one of my combat boots from a pair I often wore. Our room consisted of one main living/bedroom area, about 12 feet by 15 feet, a small bathroom, and two closets. Not many places to lose things in such a small place. I looked everywhere for that boot, but was not able to find it. Then one day I came home from class, and there was my boot in the middle of the floor, where I couldn't have missed it with my eyes closed. Just a few days after all of this, we both relocated to different rooms with different roommates, and I never heard any reports of strange happenings in that room. I was just glad to be out of there. I take this type of occurrence much more seriously than before. Haunted family. It was at my family's Christmas party that the talk turned to ghosts. And then I was surprised when my father, of all people, the quietest out of all of us, and the one who usually scoffed at our ghost prattle, that came out with a story that confused and intrigued even us. He began with, "Well, I was little and staying with my grandfather at their old farmhouse just outside of Philadelphia. My older brother Bobby and I would sleep in a little room that used to be our father's before he moved out. Well, one night Bobby and I had been out playing all day and we're a little more excited than we should have been, and we just couldn't go to sleep. To tire ourselves out, we started wrestling and finally gave up on that when Granddad yelled at us that we were making too much noise. Well, we took to telling each other ghost stories, like boys will do to scare each other and see who's the bravest. Bobby was in the middle of a tale, and suddenly the bed started shaking something awful, and on a hardwood floor, it makes a hell of a lot of noise. Once the bed stopped shaking, we began to hear something over near one of the corners whispering incoherently and in a strange language. Not thinking that there might have been something under the bed making it move that way, we both crawled under the bed and huddled together, waiting for Granddad to come rescue us. Certainly, he would be up after all the noise the bed made banging on the floor. After several minutes, however, it became apparent that Granddad just wasn't coming, and we climbed back into the bed, pulling the covers over our heads and holding each other, shaking until dawn broke, still finding both of us awake. That morning at breakfast, we both recounted the story to a skeptical grandmama and an amused granddad. Granddad finally said, "We both must have been asleep or one of us was snoring because he would have heard if the bed had made that much noise. The only sound he'd heard out of us last night was when one of us fell out of bed while wrestling." He shrugged amidst grins and everyone nodded, acknowledging his story as the gospel, and another person took his turn. Frankly, it was a story I'd never heard from him, and was glad he spoke up to say he believed despite all his scoffing. The Haunted Walmart. I live in Arkansas, and one day I went with my mother to a nearby Walmart. While I was there, I had to go to the restroom, so I proceeded to the back of the store. While I was in the restroom doing my business, I heard some tapping on the inside of one of the stalls, or maybe in the wall. This was inside the women's bathroom. After I listened for a few more seconds, I knew it was coming out of a stall. I listened closely, and I realized that it was tapping. It was like an SOS code, a Morse code. It kept doing it over and over. On the wall in front of me, I raised my fist and hit out the first three dots and one dash when something hit the stall side hard. I was not in a stall, so it did not scare me at first. After I zipped my pants, I looked under each stall to see if anyone was in there. After I would look under one stall, I would open the stall door. There was no one in any of the stalls. I was getting really nervous at the time. I hurried to get to the door when out of the corner of my eye, I saw something in the mirror. I turned quickly. It was a teenager standing motionless. It had on a tight faded blue jeans and a red and white striped shirt. I turned around and he wasn't there. Turned back around and he was still in the same motionless position. I ran out of there as fast as I could. At that time, I was barely 14 years old. Since it happened every time I go to Walmart, I stay away from that area of the store, so I haven't seen it again. The only people to believe me are my mother and my best friend, Larry, and a woman that worked there. I almost knocked her down while running out. And the truth is, I do wonder what happened to that teenage boy. My family's haunted house. When I was in college in South Carolina, I lived in a house that was built by my great-grandfather in 1915. He had died there in the 40s, and my great-grandmother lived there until her death in 1978. She was quite fond of me. I was her first great-grandchild and was named after her husband. The house was a two-story Victorian style hidden from the road by two huge drooping oak trees. After my great-grandmother died, my grandfather, her son, divided the house into three large apartments to rent to college students. The house was situated only about three blocks from the main campus. When my turn came to go to school, I naturally took up residence in the upstairs apartment. I had two roommates, and the two apartments downstairs each had two residents. After a couple of months, my roommates approached me with some strange experiences they had had. It seemed that some nights they would awaken to the feeling that they were not alone in the room. The feeling was quite overwhelming, and despite everything, they found nothing. I admitted to having had the same feeling, but we attributed it to the old and rather spooky nature of the house itself. However, other residents of the house, with whom we were only passingly acquainted, universally reported the same feeling. One would be awakened from a dead sleep to the undeniable feeling that someone else was in the room. Attributing the feeling to the old house was not enough for one of my roommates, who was so disturbed by this phenomena, he packed up his belongings and moved in with his girlfriend. A few weeks later, a girl who lived in one of the downstairs apartments became so frightened by this unseen presence that she abruptly moved out as well. I was unsettled by this also, but after all, if there was a spirit in the house, it must be a member of my own family. Those of us who remained in the house continued about our business, clinging to the sentiment that the unseen presence must be some collective psychological phenomenon brought on by living in an old house. This was the situation until early one morning in May of 1990. I had just begun summer school, and in an attempt to finally graduate, was heading out the door to an 8 a.m. class. I was coming down the exterior stairs of our apartment, which led to the driveway beside the house, when I was met by the girl who lived in one of the downstairs apartments. She was an art student at the campus, and I barely knew her. This morning, she was visibly distraught and had obviously been waiting outside on the front porch for me to come down. When she gathered her composure, she relayed to me a most frightening yarn. The night before, she had been reading in her bed quite late and petting her cat, which was laying on the bed beside her. At some instant, the cat went rigid and began to hiss at something across the room. She put down her book and looked up to see, to her utter shock, the ethereal form of a tiny old woman sitting in a chair about 10 feet from her. She stared in horror for a few seconds when the form disappeared into thin air. She immediately rose, dressed hurriedly, and spent the remainder of the night on the front porch. Her artsy nature and her strange clothing style caused me at first to write off her story to drugs, alcohol, weirdness, or some mixture thereof. I reassured her as best I could and continued to class. Later that day, I was at the house of my father, who's also in the same city, and I told him the student's story. My father is more disposed than I was to believing in such things, and asked if I would introduce him to this girl. My great-grandmother was his grandmother, and they were very close. I called her from the house, and I believe that she agreed to see him only because he owned the house she counted on for shelter. We arranged a meeting for that very evening. Before we left, my father pocketed a clear picture of my great-grandmother to show to her. When we arrived at the old house, she was still a bit uneasy. She repeated the story for my dad, who then asked if she would look at the picture of my great-grandmother. She reluctantly agreed. When he held it out to her, she regarded it for all of 2 seconds, when tears welled up in her eyes and she wilted into a nearby chair after pushing the picture out of her sight. No professional actor could have simulated the terror we saw on that girl's face when she was confronted with the living image of the figure she had seen the night before. When we calmed her, my father wanted to see the spot where she had seen the apparition. I was stunned but not overly surprised when the bedroom she indicated had belonged to my great-grandmother in life and was the very room in which she drew her final breath. Before the sun had set on the following day, the student moved out of our old house and would never set foot in it again. A couple of months later, I graduated from school and left the old family house. The events of that day, coupled with my own experiences prior, created one more firm believer in the supernatural. My ghostly companion. It all began in the summer of 1975 while my ship was undergoing an overhaul at the Long Beach Naval Station. I was sent TDY to the Galley or mess hall there on base to serve my mess cook duty. This was something that all junior seamen have to do. I was assigned to be the assistant to the night cook. The kitchen had 4 or 5 walk-in refrigerators and freezers. One of these freezers was broken and no longer used. It was also locked from the inside with a padlock and had not been used for some time. One day at shift change, when we were getting our instructions for the evening from the chief petty officer, we were standing in front of the locked freezer. At this time, the door blew open with enough force to knock the 3 of us off our feet. We were unhurt, but very surprised and shocked. We were unable to figure out why the door had opened, given the circumstances, but went on about our business. A few days later, I watched as the door opened by itself again. The door would eventually open several times during the week. Occasionally, the lids to the big cooking vats would close by themselves as well. After 2 months, I requested to be put on the day shift. No one asked why, and I didn't say, although the chief petty officer suspected as much. Nothing more happened until the spring of 1980 when I got my own apartment back in my hometown. Things started to disappear and then appear several days later in strange places. One of the favorites was my keys. They would disappear after I had gone to bed and then show up again a couple of days later, usually in my refrigerator. One of my duties at my job was to stock the singles in the soda cooler at the end of my shift. This took about an hour to do. One night, after doing this, I went back into the cooler to turn off the light and found all the cans of soda pop that I had stocked, removed from the shelves and placed back in their flats. Not more than 5 minutes had passed since I had finished stocking. I have since gotten married and had children. The incidents have grown less and less frequent. I attribute this to my wife losing her temper and yelling at whatever it is to stop hiding things, although it still likes to hide my keys from time to time. I can offer no explanation, except that I've acquired some sort of ghostly companion. The Giggling Ghosts. When I was 2 months old, we moved out of our small apartment and into a 2-story gray house that we called the Gray House, and everyone knows what house we mean. This was, for the most part, my childhood house, and like any child, I refused to go into the basement alone. I was the middle child of 3. I had an older brother and a younger sister. We were really active, always playing and romping and everything else. Our dining room was a good size, and it was cozy, and there was plenty of room for us to play. Very occasionally, when I played in there, I would see out of the corner of my eye a little girl about maybe 9 or 10 years of age, and she would be doing cartwheels. I never saw her face, but she had long hair and was wearing a dress from the 1800s. Everything about her pointed towards the 1800s. I also, just a few times, saw a little Chinese boy out of the corner of my eye from about the same time, also doing cartwheels. When I saw them, I always thought that I was seeing things. We had an attic and the door was close to my bedroom, so at night I would hear things up there. Sometimes I would imagine I heard a little girl giggling up there. There is one night in particular that I remember, even though it did happen more than once, where I was getting up in the middle of the night and telling my mom I couldn't get to sleep because the TV was too loud. "I can hear them giggling on their TV, Mom," I said. But the TV, which was right by my mom's room, wasn't on, and she was in her room. I lived in that house from the time I was 2 months until I was 10 years old. These things happened up until the time we moved out, when I was just about to turn 11. We moved into an apartment, which was for a very short time. In the first week that we lived there, the 4 of us, my mom, my sister, and my brother, and myself were sitting on the couch together. The TV was close by, and it was off, and it was nighttime, so the lights were dim. My mom said, "Since we've moved out of the gray house, now I can tell you something I didn't want to tell you while we were still living there." She was even hesitant to tell us still, but finally she did. She said that while we were living there, from the time that we moved in, she had these kind of experiences. She went on, "I remember her telling us that at times when us kids were outside playing, she would hear a little girl giggling upstairs. My mom said that this happened a lot, and she remembered me coming downstairs that night complaining about the TV. She said that she would hear the little girl playing and giggles upstairs as if having a little tea party with a friend. More times than others, she said, the girl was alone, but sometimes she would hear what sounded like a little boy with her. The giggling was always heard in the stairway or upstairs, and always when the lights were dim. Sometimes my mom would go upstairs and our toys that we hadn't played with would be out as if someone had been playing with them. Our beds that had been made would look all jumped up and wrinkled, and we either hadn't been playing upstairs or hadn't even been home at all to do it. This went on until one time we were in the front yard playing and my mom heard her up there. She decided that she was tired of it and she didn't want us to hear it and be scared, so she confronted it. She said, "I've had enough. You can live in this house with us if you want, but I am the parent and you are the child and you are to behave yourself. I don't want to hear any more out of you." And from that time on, she didn't. Never heard a peep. At this time, sitting on the couch in the apartment, my brother had a very surprised look on his face. He said that since he can remember, he would be playing in the dining room, and that out of the corner of his eye, he would see a little Chinese boy that looked out from the 1800s, and he would be doing cartwheels. These are the reasons I know that what I saw and heard was real. It was a ghost. We have talked about it since and come up with different scenarios. We found out that our house used to be a barn behind our neighbor's house. It was as old as back in the 1800s. So my favorite scenario is that the little girl was hiding the little Chinese boy who stowed away in her barn. One time they were doing cartwheels in the hayloft and fell through. Maybe they would have little tea parties and giggle up in the loft. It has been years since I've moved out of that house. We live in the next city now, as we have since about 6 months after we moved out of the gray house. Whenever we go to that city, I have my mom drive by the old house that I still miss. I often wonder whatever happened to the kids. Do they still linger in that house? What is their unfinished business? I hope to find out someday, but at least they seemed happy while they were doing those cartwheels in the dining room. Something in the attic. This experience was related to me by my mother. She said that when she was a young girl in the late 1940s in Germany, she lived in an apartment with her parents and two older sisters. She and her sisters shared a bedroom in the attic. She said that on some nights, she would be visited by a monk-like figure in a robe and hood who put his hands around her neck and tried to strangle her. She could never see its face, being obscured by the hood. She always knew the nights when these visitations would occur because she would be awakened by a light shining in her face and would then hear slow footsteps coming up the attic stairs. Too paralyzed with fear to move, or maybe by something else, she could only lie there and wait and watch helplessly until it made its appearance. She even tried to trick it one night by ducking down under the covers to the foot of the bed, but it only lifted the covers at that end instead. Her sisters never woke to see what was going on, and she couldn't tell her parents, who were very strict and that she might get punished for telling stories. The experiences didn't cease until they finally moved away. To this day, it still bothers her to talk about it, but she has considered herself going to hypnotist to see if it really happened or not, but she is afraid it will somehow find her again. Anyhow, this story always gives me the willies. Just think about that the next time you duck under the covers because you think you hear or see something scary coming your way. The Haunted Library. I'm going to write a story relating to a college I attended. It's called Mansfield University, located in Pennsylvania. This story is known by everyone who ever attended the university. There's a building on the campus called North Hall. This was built in the late 1800s and was used as a female dormitory until it was condemned for demolition in the 1970s. The building was saved and opened as a multimedia library in the fall of 1996. It's filled with books and over 100 computers for students to use for writing term papers or for access to the internet. While back in the 1910s, it was still being used as a female dorm. North Hall has a huge stairwell in the middle of the building that spans all 6 floors of the building. This has inspired many events such as all the girls gathering on the stairwell on their respective floors and caroling, or maybe even someone telling a story, possibly one of the supernatural ones. Well, one evening, Sarah, who lived in North Hall and was a major of the piano and voice, came to the stairwell. For no particular reason, she began to sing. This attracted many of the girls to the stairwell. They listened and some began to join in. Before long, just about all the girls were singing with Sarah, whose voice still remained supreme among them all. I do not know exactly how this next part happened. Either she was sitting on the banister of the stairwell, as many did because I've seen pictures, or if she was just standing too close. However, she hit such an awesome key in that tune that she was singing that she put her total effort into it. This caused her to lose her balance and fall to the bottom of the stairwell. Sarah was killed instantly as she hit the hardwood floor. There were reports that she sank the whole way down, not even letting death take away her beautiful pitch that she had accumulated during that fatal moment. Well, it turned out that the image of Sarah's body never left the hardwood floor. It was as if you could see an outline of where her body landed. The bottom floor of North Hall became carpeted soon. However, this could not keep Sarah out of North Hall. Throughout the rest of the century, people have reported seeing her in the building and from outside the building. There were also reports of a piano playing even after all the pianos in the building were transferred to the new music center. I guess that reports became too much for school officials because psychic investigators have made a journey through North Hall on more than one occasion. During my stay at the university, I was in the North Hall on the internet. I was having a good time, and I hadn't been there long when suddenly a strange feeling came over me. I got the chills very badly. For some reason, I had the feeling that someone was watching me. I turned around to see who was there, but there was no one. Well, I peered over the top of the study, Harold behind me, but no one was there. I looked back along the row, no one. I looked forward, again, no one. It was late at night, and I was all alone on the southern wing on the fourth floor. I became so scared, I quickly packed up my belongings and got out of there as fast as I could. I always felt weird there after that. I can't be sure if it was anything behind me. However, I wasn't about to give anyone or anything the chance to present themselves to me. This was the story of Sarah, the ghost of North Hall. Ask anyone who's attended university. As a matter of fact, all you have to do is look it up on the internet, and you'll see plenty of stories about the haunted library.